Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega, coming to you solo this week. No Captain Aaron Nova, no Caden Green, just me, myself, and I. And I gotta admit, it's a little weird because I got used to playing off of somebody and having somebody to talk to, and now it's just me sitting here in front of a microphone. But that's the nature of Vegas World, right? I said it would be a revolving door of co-hosts, and sometimes there won't be a co-host. It's just gonna be me here. A couple things. Obviously, there wasn't a show last week. I was sick, horrible cough, sore throat, couldn't really talk, didn't really want to feel like talking, and it was out happened during the middle of a hurricane, so that was a lot of fun. Luckily for me, no damage. I was unscathed. I know a lot of other people weren't as lucky, and my thoughts and prayers go out to them. That's always a tough situation, especially, you know, because it's a natural disaster, and you really can't stop nature from doing its thing. Couple of things we're gonna get into: my review of Beetlejuice, the long anticipated sequel to Tim Burton's 1988 cult classic film. Does it live up to the hype? You're gonna find out. A lot of other fun stuff came out on streaming we're gonna get into, like Agatha All Along and the Penguin series on HBO Max. But before we dive into all of that, I want to get into some video game talk because Sucker Punch has announced that we are getting a sequel to Ghost of Tsushima in 2025. I couldn't be more excited because I loved that first game. It was a lot of fun playing as, like, the fighting style being like between a samurai and a ninja, depending on, you know, the mission and everything. The landscapes were beautiful. All the details put into, like, not only like the landscapes, but like the architecture and all that for like all the buildings and such. Man, it was so good. So, of course, Kurosawa mode's a lot of fun. I'm a big samurai film guy, so that was a nice touch. And it, you know, melded two of my favorite things together, so that was a lot of fun. While that news was met with a lot of excitement and anticipation because the first game was critically acclaimed and such, it was also met with a lot of detractors and anger because we're not going to be following Jin Sakai in the second game. We're going to be a whole new character named Atsu, which is a female Ronin in this world. It's going to be set 300 years after the events of the first game, so it's going to be neat to kind of see the lore of the ghosts and how Jin's story has been portrayed over the years since his, you know, obvious death and him doing what he did. That'll be neat, I think. It would have been cool to see a continuation of Jin's story, especially after the events of the first game. I mean, I know depending on the ending, like, it could go two different ways, but it'd have been neat to see which way they would have gone with that, because, I mean, I think it's a fascinating story, you know, fighting the ideology of what you were raised in as a samurai to being, like, a lawless ninja, so to speak. But a lot of people are upset with the fact that it's going to be a female protagonist, and they're mainly upset with the actress who played Atsu, Erika Ishii. A lot of people are upset because of her far left-leaning political beliefs, and, man, I'm going to be honest, that's just so goddamn silly. It's stupid. Who cares? Why does it matter? Like, her personal beliefs have no bearing on the game. She was not a writer. It's not some story she crafted herself. She was contracted to be an actress and play the character that they wrote. So it's not like anything like, oh, ACAB or Black Lives Matter. They're not going to inject that into the game set in feudal Japan. It's ridiculous. And, like, you know, a lot of people are upset that she blocked people who are apparently known to be very hateful preemptively before this announcement or as the announcement was made. And they're upset about that, which again is so stupid. If she doesn't like something, why does she have to see it? You know, it's her social media. She can do what she wants with it. I mean, like, it's just absurd. Like, it's so silly. And it's even sillier than the fact that they're like, oh, I'm not going to play the game because it's a female. And why is this woke? Why is the female protagonist woke? That's the whole woke thing is just stupid to begin with, like, to me at least, because people come all shapes and sizes, different backgrounds, different beliefs, different everything. Like, you know, we're not all the same, and so everyone should have be able to tell their stories the way they want to tell them and feature things that they feel should be highlighted. Does that necessarily mean that a company who does that, or the product that they release, is good because of that? Not necessarily. And do these companies offer these things disingenuously in their products? Yes, because, I mean, there's always jokes about it. Oh, you gotta have the kooky best friend, the black friend, the lesbian, the gay polyamorous autistic person with fish scales, and we don't know why that's happening. Let's investigate that. Like, I get it. There's certain things that are just in there for the sake of it, and it doesn't make the story better. It hinders the story, but to be upset at the fact that it's simply a female is absurd, because as long as the story is good, the characterization is good, the gameplay is good, why does that matter? Why should it matter that it's a female? Who cares? It could be a fucking sponge for all I care. Like, that's the frustrating thing about this whole quote-unquote, whoa, we're in a woke culture, it's gonna be woke, it's gonna be bad because of that. Like, and that whole ideology itself is just confusing to me, because, like, what are we saying? What are you saying when you're anti-woke? Is being anti-woke meaning that the story is gonna have racial biases or bigotry towards whatever group of people? Is that what anti-woke's supposed to be? I understand hating pandering. I get that. I understand when people get upset when a popular character gets radically transformed for seemingly no reason other than, oh, let's do this so we can make more money somehow instead of making a new character. I get that. That should be scrutinized and scoffed at or what have you. I get that. But just to be like, I hate this thing just because it exists is absurd to me. That's the way I see it. I know we're not going to get anywhere with this sort of discussion. Everyone's going to have how they feel. It's just really annoying when people are like, oh, this game's going to suck just because it's a female. Or, oh, her political beliefs. Like, oh, none of that. Again, I've said it already. None of that stuff should matter. But moving on, let's talk about Marvel's new television series, Agatha All Along. I've watched the first three episodes, and all I have to say about it is meh. Because it wasn't very good. The story went nowhere. I am not invested in the characters. Well, Catherine Hahn is a phenomenal actress, and I loved what she did with Agatha in WandaVision. I just don't think that what they have or what they're presenting now necessitated an entire series based around that character. And I don't even know who the series is supposed to be for, honestly. Like, Marvel is a superhero storytelling genre. I get it. And that's we're going to have that. And I don't mind when shows deviate from the superhero aspect of it or follow characters that aren't necessarily superheroes. That could be interesting to see how characters who aren't superheroes interact with that world. But there's not a whole lot there that they gave to Agatha for me to care. Loki is a complex character because he is a psychopath. He's trying to murder, you know, millions of people or trying to do evil things. But ultimately, he just wants the love of his father and to feel like he's important. There's some complexity to that character. That's interesting. It's interesting to follow that character for two whole seasons. This show, I know it's a limited series, but it's not for me. And I watched some of the advertisement of it and how it's the gayest Marvel show out there, or it's the gayest Marvel show ever, and I don't know what that's supposed to mean or how that's supposed to make the story good or better. Just I don't know what that's supposed to mean, and maybe that's going to be revealed in later episodes, but what I've seen thus far, not impressed, and that sucks because I don't know, again, Marvel in this phase 5, phase 6, whatever they're in right now, Marvel has just been up and down. Like Deadpool and Wolverine was really good. And this is just, I don't know. They're in a slump. That's all I can say. Marvel is in a slump and something's got to be done in order to fix that. Whether it's, I guess, limiting what they do and just strictly movies and occasionally a TV show, or just, I don't know, maybe they have to think outside the box and get a little more creative with what they do with the stories they're telling. So from one villain show to another, one universe to another, let's talk about the Penguin. As you may know, or may not know, it's set in the Batman universe created by Matt Reeves and his interpretation of Batman lore. My one little nitpick about the show, or just the entire approach in general, is the fact they felt they needed to change the Penguin's name. Because in the show, he is not called Oswald Cobblepot. He is Oz Cobb, because they felt Oswald Cobblepot was unrealistic of a name for a person to have, and their approach is grounded. Now, all right, I'm all for a more mature, serious take on superhero lore, especially a character like the Batman. But Oz Cobb don't sound that much better than Oswald Cobblepot. But nonetheless, Colin Farrell as the Penguin, phenomenal. I swear, dude, like, him in that, like, fat suit and all that is a trip, because if you didn't tell me that was Colin Farrell, I wouldn't know that the Penguin is being played by Colin Farrell. The first episode, titled After Hours, takes place 1 week after the events of the film. Carmine Falcone is dead, Gotham has been flooded, and that's gonna leave a power vacuum in the criminal underworld, and who better to seize the moment and take control other than the Penguin? And man, he is a conniving, skeeving, dirty little man. He obviously, you know, in the film, he worked with Carmine Falcone, but in the show, it's revealed he used to work for Sal Moroni, and he's looking to hit him, each other against one another, obviously. I mean, classic deception and chicanery in your mob film. I love it. I love the tone of the series so far. Christian Milioti, who plays Sophia Falcone, is horrifying. Like, she hasn't done anything super crazy yet. Well, I mean, that's something, but I'm not going to spoil it. But man, like, just the look in her eyes, you would not want to be alone with this woman. And you could tell that she's got a couple of screws in her head loose. She claims that she was rehabilitated and that she was let out of Arkham Asylum, but knowing how Gotham works, there was probably some chicanery to get her out. But man, no, just a fun show. You know, I like this approach. Again, like, I'm all for, you know, breaking the mold of a superhero show and how those universes operate. And this show, if, you know, it doesn't act like a superhero film, and I would argue that it could, maybe in the end, be up there with other prestigious crime dramas like The Sopranos, Breaking Bad. Maybe that's a bold claim by me. Maybe. I could be just, you know, huffing a lot of copium or optimism or whatever you want to say, but no, man. The show's been good. Like I said, I've only watched the first episode, and that one episode was tremendous. I love the layers to the Penguin's character, and I love the dynamic between him and Vic and how they came together. Vic is played by, I'm gonna butcher this guy's name, Renzi Felice. He was in the show called The Runaways from Marvel, or Marvel adjacent, whatever. But they are playing off each other is really good, and they're kind of similar in some aspects of being, I guess, quote-unquote nobodies, and they want to be somebody and important. Clancy Brown as Salvatore Moroni, phenomenal. I love his voice. Dude's got an excellent voice. He doesn't do audiobooks. I feel like he needs to, and I will listen to them just for his voice. But anyway, he's great in his role for what I've seen of him thus far. With this whole show, I am curious to see where it all ends and how it will affect the story of the Batman 2 and what we could expect in that movie from this show. Another big plus for the show, and just the Matt Reeves' approach to the Batman universe in general, is how Gotham City is portrayed. I love, as much as I dislike Tim Burton's Batman stories as a Batman story, how he crafted Gotham City with the Gothic architecture and like almost this 1920s aesthetic. That was cool. That was unique. I loved that. And I love the way they have framed Gotham City in this show and how they set the atmosphere with the rain, the griminess of downtown, the more upper class, super fancy schmancy decor for the Falcone house, and how this shows the social economic disparity between how the rich people of Gotham live versus the maybe lower to middle class citizens of Gotham. Making Gotham feel real is what helps the elevate the story and gets me more invested. Because I hate when, like, I mean, in Batman Begins, they established Gotham as a unique place. In the last two movies, it just felt like, okay, we're in Chicago or New York, but it's Gotham City. But it's really these places instead of giving its own unique personality. So for that, I will say kudos, and I can't wait to see the next episode of The Penguin. And we're moving on to the main event of this podcast. God, you know what? I'm gonna be honest. I hate using wrestling terminology on the podcast. Aaron does it a lot, and it kind of drives me crazy, but love him nonetheless. Anyways, finally, after 30 some odd years of asking, wandering, pleading, we finally have a sequel to the 1988 film Beetlejuice, aptly titled Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. There was a possible sequel that was in the works at one point right after the original film, and it was going to be called Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. Kevin Smith was offered a rewrite for that movie. It was between that and Superman Lives, and Kevin Smith posed the question, must we go tropical? And to that, I agree, because that'll be a little weird. Because I know Tim Burton's films likes to take his offbeat characters and put them into what people perceive as a normal society and have that juxtaposition and wacky comedy, but that might have been a step too far. But that's not what we got in this film. No, we have Winona Ryder as Lydia Deetz, as a daytime talk show host where she talks to ghosts. And you know, for the people watching, oh, it's a wacky gimmick maybe, or maybe it's real. And while she's filming this show, she has an image of Beetlejuice sitting in the crowd. Is it real? Is it an hallucination? What's going on here? And, you know, takes her away from the show, and Rory, her boyfriend, is clearly not out for her best interests. You know, he's gaslighting her, being like, oh, I'm here for you, but he's, you know, really trying to use her for his own gains. Tries to talk her, you know, talk with her and get her to finish the show. And while she's doing this, she finds out that her father, Charles Dietz, has passed away. And the reason for this is because Jeffrey Jones is a creep. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of it. You can find that out yourself. But yeah, that's the reason he's not in this movie, even though he was in the first one and he was hilarious as an actor in that film. Yeah, great. But as a person, he's freaking despicable. And the fact that they even included a lot more of the character than I thought they should have kind of rubs me the wrong way. Especially, like, you spend all that time about that character, but then, like, for the Maitlands, Adam and Barbara, played by Alec Baldwin and Geena Davis, they're like, oh, they found a loophole, because in the first movie, they're supposed to stay in their house for 125 years as ghosts until they can go to the afterlife. But, you know, with the thing called aging, they didn't feel they could use Alec Baldwin and Geena Davis, and it'd be weird probably to try to de-age them. Maybe that'll definitely been some uncanny valley. So I get why they weren't in the film, but the way their explanation works for the Maitlands and then Charles, And nonetheless, they have to go back to the little small town in Connecticut called Winter River, and she has to bring along her daughter, Astrid, who is played by Jenna Ortega, the latest horror it girl, I guess. I mean, I guess she is to this decade what Christina Ricci and Winona Ryder herself were to the 80s and 90s. Michael Keaton as the titular character, Beetlejuice. Dude, if you would have told me that he's been playing this character for decades, I'd believe you because he did not miss a beat. This is only his second time playing the character, and it's still the same guy as he was in the first movie. You know, humor and the way they do things in movies now is a lot different than what they were getting away with in the 80s. But no, Beetlejuice is still Beetlejuice, still irreverent, still provocative in that way. He was fun. Willem Dafoe's character, Wolf Jackson, who was an actor in real life, and played a, you know, I guess a detective in his movies, is now forced to be a cop in the afterlife. He was hilarious in his role. Catherine O'Hara as Delia Dietz was pretty fun. You know, she was good in her role. I feel like she hammed it up a lot more this time around than the first movie. Because while she was like the snooty, hippy dippy artist, I don't remember her being that over the top as she was in this movie. But I mean, it was fine. I loved how she played off Winona Ryder when they had scenes together. Overall, this movie, there were some fun ideas here and there, but it just was a big mess. It felt like they had tried to cram in a mini series worth of stories into like the 2 hours or whatever it was that they had. And it's clearly because by they had to rush to an ending when we were getting close, and it just kind of just abruptly gone. It was over. And that was kind of like, all right, I mean, it's not as streamlined as the first movie where Adam and Barbara are trying to get these people out of their house, and you know, they consider doing it themselves and they think about getting Beetlejuice. Like, it was a more centered story than this one, where we followed Lydia, and then we followed Astrid, and then there was another subplot with mom, and just, you know, it was all just all over the place. And I think that kind of suffered a bit overall for the movie. I mean, like I said, there were fun parts. The Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice when he was on screen was tremendous. It was pretty neat to see Lydia and Beetlejuice team up, because as a kid, I loved the Beetlejuice TV show, and in that show, they were friends more so than adversaries. I mean, they hung out all the time. So that was kind of neat to have maybe, I guess, a slight homage to that, if that were the case. If not, then it tied itself neatly into what I remember of Beetlejuice as a kid, besides watching the first movie. And it was neat how they used the Deo song in this film, because I mean, they did it, I think it was a big part of the first movie. They had a big musical number in that movie that was really funny. I didn't necessarily like the musical number in this movie so much. Just it didn't hit the same way as Deo did in the first movie. And for that aspect, I didn't like the paint by numbers or hey, remember this type of thing. For that, it just didn't work for me. Comparing it to the first movie, I don't think I would watch this movie as much as I do the first one. I'm not it's not up it's not there for me in that. It was fun, I'll say that. They kind of left it open-ended, so there may be a sequel, maybe not. I mean, Tim Burton claims that because it took almost 30 years to get this one, it's probably never gonna happen, or they'll all be dead by the time it's time for another one, so who knows? The next question is, does it live up to the original? And while I think this is a fine movie, when I say fine, I wasn't offended, it didn't bore me, and it didn't frustrate me like some sequels do when they're like trying to cash in on a property. This just wouldn't be something I'm gonna watch again, or if I'm decided I'm gonna watch the first movie, I'm not gonna be like, all right, let's now watch the second one. If it's on TV, or if I'm just so happen to be bored and it's on a streaming service and I'm like, all right, let me just have that on the background, that'll probably happen. But it's not, I don't think it's as good or will be as remembered as the first movie was. And again, maybe that's just nostalgia painting my view, because you know, that could play a part where people think the original is better just because of that. But I feel the first movie holds up, like aesthetic wise, as far as like practical effects go, it works well still in this day and age. This, you know, the scene on Jupiter maybe a little bit too much for some people because you know the dated effects, but overall, like, it's fine. I could still watch it and enjoy it. This one, yeah, it's not gonna be on just for the sake of, hey, I'm gonna sit down and watch a movie. Like, it's probably gonna be one of those, I am really, really bored, there's nothing else, white noise in the background. And in saying that, but still, I would like to see them come back. I'd like to see Michael Keaton and Winona Ryder as, you know, Beetlejuice and Lydia once again, and see where the story could conclude if there was to be a third movie. Again, They left it open-ended. So, you know, it didn't derail me from seeing anything else Beetlejuice related if there is going to be something back in that property. I mean, I know there was a stage show back in the day. Like I said, there was a cartoon. Who knows, man? But yeah, I think that about covers my thoughts on that and everything else that I wanted to speak about today. If you want to follow me on the social media, you can find me at the JC Vega on all social media platforms. If you want to help support me, you can go to prowrestlingtees.com and go to my merch store. I've got a couple of cool shirts on there that you could buy. One says Punk Rock, the other says Rainbow Dash. And if you like that, this is the stuff for you. So please help out. Thank you for tuning in. I'll catch you next week.